Hey, what's up, everybody? My name's MJ, and you're listening to the MTG in Quarantine podcast. As usual, I'd like to give a quick shout-out before we begin to my local game store, Guardian Games. You can find Guardian Games on the web at ggportland.com. I'd like to utilize this opportunity to give a huge shout-out and thank you to all the awesome people who have supported me over at patreon.com/MTGinQuarantine. So a huge thank you to Mr. Big Bence, Anomaly, Draco Lucian, Neo Royal, Nick S, Infamous Fridge, Frugal Brutal, Jen of the Filthy MTG Casuals, Coach J-Ro, and Geek Beardly for supporting the show. If you'd like to help support the show and help me make more awesome content, head on over to patreon.com/MTGinQuarantine for more information. And one more thing before we get started here, you can now buy your personal MTG in Quarantine branded playmats over at inkgaming.com. Currently have two options available, the full color and the monochrome version of the logo, so if you want to pick up your own custom MTG in Quarantine branded playmat, go on over at inkgaming.com. You can find the links in my link tree in this episode description. Now, on to the episode. So, today's episode is going to be another episode in the series where I try to bring really awesome people from the CDH community on to talk about their personal CDH builds and try to walk you, the listeners, through their personal list and also try to pitch their awesome deck lists and really kind of walk through everything for you. So, without further ado, I'd like to introduce a longtime friend but first-time guest on the show, Dan from Moderately Anonymous MTG. Welcome to the show.
Hi, hello. Thank you so much for having me. Very, very excited to be here today.
That's great having you. I mean, it's been quite a while since we started talking, and a few months since I was on your stream. So it's good to finally be able to connect and get this episode done.
Yeah, I am super pumped. This is going to be really fun. I love this deck a lot, so I'm always excited to be able to talk about it.
And before we begin, can you tell the awesome listeners out there where they can find Moderately Anonymous MTG?
Yeah, of course. You can find me pretty much everywhere on the internet at the same name. I am a YouTube and Twitch streamer. You can find me on Twitch every Wednesday and Saturday at 8 p.m. Eastern, twitch.tv/moderatelyanonymousMTG. And I put out new edited YouTube videos every single Saturday at noon Eastern. And you can also find me on Twitter and Instagram and TikTok at the same name.
Awesome, awesome. So we're going to be talking about one of your very favorite personal decks here, Dan, and that is going to be your Kess Dissonant Mage Turbo Gnaws deck. And for those out there who don't know what Kess does, Kess Dissonant Mage is a 3/4 human wizard costing 1 blue, black, red, so 1 in Grixis colors, has flying, and reads, during each of your turns, you may cast an instant or sorcery card from your graveyard. If a card cast this way would be put into your graveyard, exile it instead. So from the outset here, this is a commander that loves to be able to play a whole bunch of instants and sorceries and then be able to pull them out from the graveyard, basically kind of giving them pseudo flashback on your turn specifically from the graveyard. So Now that we've basically broken that down a little bit, and since we are in the Grixis colors here, Dan, could you basically walk us through exactly what this deck does, what it's looking to do, what the win conditions are, and then we're going to kind of go through some of the interesting cards, some interesting synergies when we break down the deck. Sound good?
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the easiest ways to talk about sort of the core engines and philosophies of what this deck does is to just sort of try to talk about what you would look for in your opening hands, which is an abundance of fast mana that you would get through your zero cost artifacts, like all of the Lotus Petals and Chromoxes of the world. And then, of course, all of the ritual spells like Dark Ritual, Rite of Flame, and all of the other things that make extra mana. And basically what we want to do is transition those into our different draw engines. One of the main ones in the deck that this is often called a turbo ad nauseum strategy. So we're trying to very quickly play an ad nauseum as early as turn one, as late as turn three, but ideally we would like to be sticking this on turn one or two. And those are the sorts of hands that we're trying to mulligan very aggressively for. I'm not uncomfortable going down to as low as 4 cards in my hand at the beginning of a game with Kess, because what we were specifically looking for is things like Wheel of Fortune to be able to refill our hands, or ideally that ad nauseum. So to speak very specifically to what ad nauseum is trying to do for this deck, this is the main strategy of the deck, and what we're trying to do is just reveal a mass quantity of cards. Specifically, what they are matters a little bit less, more so than the amount of them. What we're trying to do is create a critical mass of cards that we can acquire into our hand, and we do want ones of all sorts of different varieties that are our ritual spells, our different rocks to be able to transition between different colors of mana to be able to do things. And of course, our tutors to be able to find our win cons. And maybe some different forms of protection, either in counters or in bounce spells to remove stacks pieces and things like that. And basically what we were trying to do is create an overwhelming amount of advantage that we have with our Ad Nauseam cards or our Peer into the Abyss cards as another backup strategy. And basically be able to outmaneuver our opponents in any number of situations with just the sheer amount of cards that we have over the rest of the table. And basically what we're going to try to end up doing is transition all of this mana and advantage into one of our win cons, which is going to normally be Underworld Breach is the main plan. This is, if you would look at it, you'll see one of the very few creatures is Thassa's Oracle, and it is a Thassa's Oracle deck, and we're trying to win ultimately with Thassa's Oracle, but rather than just going for the raw Thassa's Oracle Demonic Consultation, if we are if we're prioritizing Underworld Breach as our main plan, we have a lot more backup just being able to reuse our interaction from the graveyard and things like that. So we're trying to get as many cards into our hand as possible and then as many cards as we can into our graveyard to be able to transition all of this massive amount of card advantage into just an overwhelming win that no one would be able to stop.
For sure, for sure. And since this is actually the first time that I mentioned Ad Nauseam on the show here, Dan, could you actually walk us through what exactly this card does and why it's so special compared to other mass card draw options you'll see in CDH or just in regular at regular tables?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'll just read it off. Ad Nauseam is an instant spell. It's three generic and black. It says, reveal the top card of your library and put that card into your hand. You lose life equal to the mana value of that card, and you may repeat this process as many times as you want. So the very key difference between that and Peer into the Abyss, which is maybe a little bit more fresh in people's minds since it was printed more recently, is that this is not a draw effect. So it does work around Narset Parter Avails and what used to be the whole Breacher slots of the world and things like that. And very importantly, it's at instant speed. So you are able to do this over the top of other people trying to win the game and be able to outmaneuver them with spells that you might be able to draw. And like I said, the main advantage that this provides is that it allows you to put just a massive amount of cards into your hand, so much so that your opponents will not be able to overcome the amount of advantage that you've gained from it.
Yeah, and again, it's really important, since you just brought that up, that these cards will be going to your hand. So they're not being exiled, they're going straight to your hand. So again, as you did mention, all those zero-cost mana rocks, all of a sudden now you're able to, I don't know, get a bunch of extra mana that you maybe didn't have that same turn or have on earlier turns. So all of a sudden you have those. You have your counter spells, protect your combos, you have the creatures you need. Maybe you found your Demonic Consultation, maybe you found Thoracle, just various things like that. So you're able to basically utilize this, really just have a gigantic hand, hopefully not kill yourself in the process. That's always a problem with Ad Nauseam, as I understand it. But you're as long as your deck is built around that, you're effectively able to just fill your hand, play a whole bunch of rocks, rituals that you just mentioned, and just be able to just gain so much value. And then I'm assuming Kess is really here at the helm to not only be able to return some of your tutors or whatnot, but also be able to get Ad Nauseam right back out of the graveyard as well.
Yeah, so Kess occupies an interesting space in this deck because Kess is not entirely necessary to using this deck at all. Ideally, we would just draw all of the correct cards and play all of the correct advantage spells, and we don't need Kess to win the game. But what Kess does for this deck is provides us a backup, not only win con, but also advantage engine that we can be mulliganing towards. We do have a Jeweled Lotus in this deck as a more recent, as of a few months ago, addition that I made to this deck. So that just helps to be able to get out a rather sizable blocker and also that extra advantage engine. But the very specific advantages that Kess provides for this deck are turning Intuition and also either Demonic Consultation or Tainted Pact into one card win cons. So with the Consultation or the Tainted Pact, if you're unfamiliar with either of those effects, they can effectively exile your entire library if you would like to be able to win with a Thassa's Oracle trigger. And with either one of those cards, if you have Kess on the battlefield, you cast it from your hand. If you have a Demonic Consultation, you have to name your Thassa's Oracle. Hope you don't exile it in the top six. But it goes to your hand, then you're able to cast the Thassa's Oracle from your hand and then cast the Demonic Consultation or the Tainted Pact again from your graveyard. So effectively, you're just able to tutor up the entire win con with one card. Intuition is another card that is an instant speed, two and one blue card. It says, search your library for three cards and reveal them. an opponent chooses one of them and you put that card in your hand and the rest into your graveyard. So in this deck, we have the Thassa's Oracle, the Consultation, and then Reanimate would be the third card that we would ideally put in our Intuition pile. So that way, no matter which one of the cards that our opponent gives us, we get to use the other ability from Kess to cast the other one from the graveyard. So we get Thassa's Oracle in hand, we can just cast the Consultation from the graveyard. We get Consultation in hand, we can just cast the Reanimate from the graveyard, and any way you want to swap it.
Yeah, that's definitely interesting. So again, this seems to be something that a lot of other Grixis decks seem to love doing, is the Thoracle Combo, Maw Consultation, but also Underworld Breach. So it's definitely interesting to see how you're utilizing some of these most powerful cards in the format in this color pairing to make it work. And when you look up and down the list here, there's just so many staple-y cards in here. It just reads like a what of CDH in this color pairing.
Yes, the basic approach that I've taken with this deck is just trying to slim down everything to just the best of all options, which is pretty easy to do in Grixis colors. All of a lot of the really greatest cards in the meta are in these colors. There are a few that we miss out on, very namely things like Literal Silence and other silence effects that we would love to have in this deck. But other than that, it is very slimmed down to the bare bones, what are going to be the most powerful cards that we can possibly rip. Because again, what we're working towards in all situations with our opening hands are effects like Wheel of Fortune to refill our hands. So we want every single one of our, not only our top decks, but also our draw sevens to just be so phenomenally good that no one can keep up with us.
Mm-hmm. Definitely makes sense, because the average CMC your deck here is really small. It's 1.25 with your lands, and outside of Ad Nauseam, according to Moxfield, which is a great website. If you aren't using Moxfield for your deck building site, I think you're missing out personally. I put all my stuff on there, but alas, your average mana value is 1.21. So you're probably going to be able to find at least a decent critical mass of cards every time you cast Ad Nauseam, because you just have such a low mana curve here, and you can really start threatening those wins turn 1, 2, and 3.
Yeah, so before we started, you asked me a little bit about talking more about Ad Nauseam and the sort of different philosophies and how you play it. My total mana value of my entire deck is 124, so this entire deck is just built around the card Ad Nauseam, because we want our Ad Nauseams to be very, very good every time. We have got a sizable amount of 3-drops in the sorcery slot, which is not nothing, but it is usually enough that all of these 3-drops are generally good enough to win a game, so we don't mind having them so much. Peer into the Abyss is the one big outlier, as like that is a 7-drop. It is very chunky when it is coming off the top of your Ad Nauseam, as well as the Force of Will, but that is sort of that's just sort of a casualty of being in the format. That is just something that is completely unavoidable.
You kind of live with it, honestly.
Yeah, and you know, it's fine. That's something you want to see in your Ad Nauseam pile, because any mana that you're not devoting to trying to win and that you can just have a free counterspell, that's very good. It's very much worth the 5 life that you would take off of it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, there are some other things that are in the database deck that I am not running, like Mizzix Mastery is a 4-drop. I believe that was from one of the Commander precons. It is a sorcery that casts a spell from your graveyard and also has an overload cost of, I think it is 5 and triple red to cast every instant sorcery in your graveyard. But there are certain things like that and some other chunky value engines that I am not running in an effort to just slim it down a little bit more and really hyper-focus on making that Ad Nauseam as good as it can be.
Okay, so since we keep mentioning Ad Nauseam here, Dan, basically walk us through exactly what you're trying to find necessarily through your Ad Nauseam. So let's say you're on turn 2, turn 3, you cast Ad Nauseam on instant speed someone else's turn. Basically, kind of walk us through exactly what you're trying to find, if you're going for the win, or maybe if it's just a general value engine. I guess this kind of comes more from me asking a lot of questions about, you hear a lot of things about Ad Nauseam, but not everyone always walks you through exactly what you're looking for off of Ad Nauseam. So I think it'd be kind of helpful both for myself and for the listeners for you just basically talk us through the concept of this card. And then just basically, what are some of the pieces that you're looking for, especially when you're on someone else's turn? You may not be able to play those mana rocks you're getting in your hand.
Yeah. For that reason, I do generally tend to Ad Nauseam on my own turn, given the right circumstances. Of course, you want to hedge your bets against blue opponents with mana open, of course, and like sort of subtle things like that. But it does also just allow you to transition all of these things immediately into your win and not have to worry about any other particular things that you might not be expecting your opponents to do. It is always nice to be able to Ad Nauseam on someone else's turn. In this particular deck, I tend to do it a lot more on my own main phase. But okay. In any given situation, I will say that the one card that you're looking for when you're casting your ad nauseum is Dockside Extortionist. Dockside Extortionist, I think most people are probably pretty familiar with it, but it is a 2-mana goblin ETBs, and you get an amount of treasure tokens equal to the number of artifacts and enchantments your opponents control. This card is the ritual to end all rituals. This card just means that you really don't have to do any particular sort of math or really heavy thinking when you are sorting through your ad nauseum pile and trying to figure out what your exact win con is, because this just really solves all of your problems, from fixing to the amount of mana that you're going to be making. We have lots of bounce spells like Chain of Vapor, Alchemist Retrieval, and a few other things to be able to put Dockside Extortionist back in our hand and recast it and get more mana. The things that we're trying to transition to after our mana would be the very easy win cons. Can just be Thassa's Oracle, Demonic Consultation, Underworld Breach. Things that go with Underworld Breach that make it the win con that it is are an artifact called Grinding Station. It's a 2-mana artifact. It says sacrifice an artifact. Target player puts the top 3 cards of their library into their graveyard. Very conveniently, the amount of cards that you need to exile to Underworld Breach to be able to escape things. And it also has a static effect on it. It says whenever an artifact comes into play, you may untap Grinding Station. So you're able to use Underworld Breach and Grinding Station to be able to continually recast 0-mana artifacts like Mox Opal from your graveyard, make mana with it, and then grind more cards into your graveyard and effectively filter through the entire thing so that you can mill yourself out and then cast a Thassa's Oracle to win. But some other cards that you might be looking for, depending on your situation, you could go for your Intuition line that we discussed earlier. There are also all of the different wheel effects that we can transition into just more card advantage if that happened to be the kind of situation where we're in, where we just don't have the right sort of tutors and things. But of course, we're also just looking for demonic tutor effects to be able to put any of those win cons into our hand. And one other card that is a sort of weird card that maybe people are less familiar with outside of the CEDH realm is Mnemonic Betrayal. This is a sorcery for 1BB. It says exile all cards from all opponents' graveyards. You may cast those spells this turn, and you may spend mana as though it were mana of any color to cast them. At the beginning of the next end step, all of the cards that weren't cast that way go back into the graveyards, and you have to exile the betrayal. So basically, like I said, we're trying to always be Wheel of Fortuneing cards into our opponents' graveyards. So at any given point in the game, we can probably cast a couple of different tutors out of opponents' graveyards to just win a game. So Mnemonic Betrayal is sort of a nicely tucked in win con that just dovetails with all of our other win effects. Another thing in that same vein is Praetor's Grasp, another sorcery for 1BB, and that says you search a target opponent's library for a card to exile it, and then you may cast it for its regular mana and colors and all that, but basically allows you, if you've somehow, maybe you cast a Demonic Consultation, you accidentally exile all of your own win cons, you don't even have your Thassa's Oracle anymore. Now you can take a Praetor's Grasp and you can Praetor's Grasp your opponent's Thassa's Oracle out of their deck and still win with it.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense there. Yeah, so you have a very, very flexible deck here, obviously. And again, just when you look at the deck list, there is so much good stuff here. It really makes sense why you really enjoy playing this deck. And I think now that actually reminds me, what are maybe some of the cards in here that are different than what other similar Grixis shells that we've seen that you're really proud about and you really want to talk about?
This deck is like pretty stock in its different slots. One thing that I'm running that I don't see a lot of lists on really at all in the CEDH world is Plunge into Darkness. Plunge into Darkness is an instant for 1BB. It is from Darksteel and has an entwine cost of black. It says that you can choose one or choose both if you pay the entwine cost. And you get to choose one of these effects. Sacrifice any number of creatures, and you gain 3 life for each creature sacrificed this way, which I have used before to save myself from dying. And is honestly, you can sacrifice the Dockside Extortionist to it, put it in your graveyard, and reanimate it. So there are some like niche places where that effect is actually quite good.
Mm-hmm.
Same goes to for a Thassa's Oracle. If someone happens to like stifle your trigger or use some sort of stifle effect, if you happen to run in that very niche scenario. But the more prominent half of it is the other option, which says pay X life and look at the top X cards of your library. Put one of them into your hand and remove the rest from the game. This is, it seems like a very high cost to put a singular card into your hand, but basically what it amounts to is that this is a mini ad nauseum. It just doesn't provide you with the same card advantage, but it is the similar sort of effect and provides the same sort of advantage in that you get the one particular card that you very, very much need out of your top cards. And it provides a very interesting dynamic to the table where you're exiling the rest of these cards. So you are showing your opponents everything else that you've exiled. And sometimes some very high profile things, like sometimes you are at exiling your ad nauseum or something like that, because what you really need is a Wheel of Fortune or something like that. It can very much change the perception of your opponents in the way that they're going to try to approach what you're doing, because they now have this extra added information that, oh, Mod doesn't have access to X, Y, and Z card anymore, so now they're going to have to change the way that they're playing this game. But it obviously provides you with this extra advantage that you know what this card is, and it's something that you actually were really looking for. I would generally pay like maybe 10 or 15 life into this if we're just starting the game and this was like a turn one or two play. But it's a very sneaky card. It's something that I don't see a lot of people play, and it's an interesting card because of the fact that a lot of people don't really play it and haven't really heard of it. So you gain a sort of interesting tilt advantage to it when you play it, because people are not quite sure how to evaluate what you're doing.
Yeah, and again, you did mention the downside that you're exiling a whole bunch of cards. Same thing basically goes with Consultation, same thing with Tainted Pact. And again, for the listeners out there who are typically playing maybe more casual games, where exiling a lot of your own cards seems really, really bad, can you kind of just walk us through why this is really important, even though it does have a major downside, and why maybe in CDH those sorts of downsides actually really don't hurt you all that much?
Yeah, I would actually love to talk about this, because I'm going to say something that I feel like might not make sense to people, but this is a deck that does not require you to have any win cons inside of it. You don't really need most of these cards. You are very necessarily, because we're playing EDH, playing 99 cards in your deck, but you don't really need almost all of them. I was joking recently on Twitter that if Fast's Oracle got banned from this format, I would just replace it with a counterspell that I wasn't already running, and I don't know that my win con would meaningfully change, because there are just so many other ways. Like you were saying earlier, it's a very flexible deck. There are so many different ways that we can approach all sorts of different situations. We don't really need a Thassa's Oracle to win. We don't need a Demonic Consultation to win. We just need one of our flexible pieces, and we are able to piece together a win out of almost nothing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's definitely interesting that you mentioned that, because again, there has been a lot of discussion on Twitter, and I'm not going to go into the whole card should be banned, card shouldn't be banned thing, but the listeners out there know that.
Not an interesting conversation, honestly, I think.
Yeah, the listeners do probably are aware that Thassa's Oracle is fairly controversial, I suppose. Is that a good way to say that there, Dan? Is that it's a bit controversial, and same with Dockside, just because they're so kind of omnipresent in the format?
I think, I don't know, Thassa's Oracle definitely elicits very strong emotions from people. I don't view it as problematic at all. I think that, you know, if Thassa's Oracle is gone, a Thassa's Oracle card replaces it either immediately or somewhere down the line. There's just always a strongest card in the format. So it sort of is what it is in my own eyes. Other people feel much more strongly about it than I do, to say the least. I think that probably more the average CDH player might be more concerned with Dockside Extortionist in just terms of sheer power level. Because like I said earlier, that is the sort of, it's the key that unlocks everything. There's just no longer any sort of stress that is required to navigating your lines once you have the Dockside Extortionist. Just being able to make 4 or 5 mana off of it just immediately takes away all of the extra real legwork that you might need to finesse out of a win.
No joke. But again, For the listeners out there, I'm not trying to say cards should or shouldn't be banned. I think it's just interesting that since we're talking about Thoracle here, it seems like we're always hearing this conversation about is it a problem for the format or it is not. So I pretty much just wanted to ask you, Dan, your thoughts on that one, and you had a very good response to that, so thank you.
Yeah, not a problem in my eyes. I have a very lenient view on sort of bannings and things like that, though. I think fewer things should be on the ban list than currently are. One of the reasons why I really love EDH is because you get to play so many different kinds of things, and it's the sort of format where a meta like CDH can exist, because you get to play with all of these ridiculously strong cards, including all the fast mana and things like that. Or you can not do that also, and that's really what makes it so awesome.
Okay, And so I think that gets us to the end of the episode, basically, here. So, Dan, now that we've discussed your particular deck here, how about you basically give us the elevator pitch or kind of the intro pitch for anyone out there who's interested in trying out this particular deck or something that's very similar like that? What are some of the main things you would mention to someone who wants to try this out for the first time but doesn't really know exactly if they wanted to give it a try? Maybe explain just some of the basic things you're looking for. I know you did that already, but basically just give us like a 1 or 2 minute summary of how you get started with this deck and why you out there, again, you, the listener, should play this particular deck.
Listener, I think if you are the kind of person who really enjoys quite powerful magic, if you enjoy being the person that other people are trying to police at the table and not trying to police other people, if you enjoy being the threat at the table and just constantly putting up just very strong, powerful strategies, then I think that Grixis in general, but Kess is also a very, very fun option. There are some really great Grixis variants to choose besides Kess. There's the Brograx Iluses of the world. Armix Chrom is another popular option at the moment. The thing that I really like about Kess is that, again, like I said earlier, she is not necessary to our game plan, but she is an excellent backup engine. She's got a very sizable body that is quite relevant in a lot of places, blocks Nagilas and things like that. It's a really fun deck overall. It is also, it's very different every time. You might hear people say that Ad Nauseam or Thassa's Oracle decks are very samey, not very much thought needed to go into them. But I will tell you that an experienced Grixis pilot anywhere can tell you that any game that you play is a different puzzle than you've ever played before with the same pieces. And it is always an interesting and fun time trying to figure out how to unlock the key to this puzzle. It's a really fascinating mini game that you get to play, and it is surprisingly defensive. You're able to put up a lot of good defenses with this deck. My deck is running 27 lands, which is a little bit lower than any of the other cast decks on the database because I've upped the amount of stack interaction on it. I'm also running 29 instants, which is, I think, also higher than both of the cast decks on the database. It's just a very fast, very interactive deck that really makes you work for all of your wins and is also just really fun and entertaining every time you play it.
Wow.
And if you wanted to pick it up and start playing it for the first time, I would definitely suggest just sitting down and just trying to take a look at your mulligans. Mulligans are definitely one of the harder parts to understand about the game, but the one thing that you just always want to keep in mind is that you're trying to play a turn 1 to 2.5 Wheel of Fortune or Ad Nauseam effect, and that is basically your whole goal every single game.
That's actually really simple to remember. I think that definitely hopefully will resonate with everybody out there who's, again, still new to the format, but or this side of the format anyway, but is interested in trying something out. So it's definitely good that you actually had a really nice little canned response there. It was really nice.
It's my thought process going into it every time because there is the gigantic decision tree that you'll have to inevitably face when you're looking at all of your Ad Nauseam cards. But having that singular sort of root point of just I am trying to transition to the card advantage mode of this game, it makes it really easy to look at any hand and say this either does that or it does not and I can keep it or I can't. And also knowing that you can mulligan very, very low. I've won on a multiple one in this deck before, so
wow,
it's even possible to get the City of Brass, and it was enough to get me there.
Wow, that's amazing, Dan. I want to thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me today. I've loved talking with you about this deck. It definitely looks interesting, and I encourage the listeners out there to check the deck list. I'm going to include that in the description for this episode in case you're interested in checking it out. And also check out Dan over at Mod Anon, which, again, Dan, where can the people out there find your stuff?
Yeah, you can catch me on Twitch every single Wednesday and Saturday night at 8 p.m. Eastern and catch new edited CEDH gameplay videos on YouTube every Saturday at noon Eastern. Thanks so much for having me, MJ. This is a ton of fun. I love talking about casts. So, yeah, thanks so much for giving me the opportunity to do it.
No problem. And thank you for being so prepared for this episode. It's been great just being able to talk to you about this episode and learn a few things in the process myself.
Yeah, like I said, if you ever want to do that full Ad Nauseam episode, I could do a 45-minute episode about Ad Nauseam easily with you.
Actually, yeah, I think that actually be a really good idea. We'll try to figure out the details at some point on that. But yeah, definitely be on the lookout there, listeners, for some sort of Ad Nauseam episode at some point in the future. I think it'd just be really helpful to have out there in the lexicon for the newer players to really kind of understand how this card can and not really warp the format, but can basically warp entire decks and strategies around it. So it just, it's powerful, and I think it just needs kind of a good breakdown to really, you know, explain exactly what it's trying to do in a variety of situations.
There are so many subtleties to really understanding it, and there's a lot of layers to being an ad nauseum pilot. It's definitely something that if you're very interested in it, it's worth delving deeper into.
All right. Thank you, Dan. And if you're interested in hearing any of the other CEDH deck episodes, any of the competitive content that I've done in general, or just any of the back catalog of the entire MTG in Quarantine podcast, you can find those on the usual podcast outlets. That's your Google, Apple, Spotify, Player FM, Rocket Cast, Pocket Cast, Overcast, Breaker, and a million other ones. I never remember all of them, but if it's a major podcast outlet, odds are you can probably find my stuff on there. You can also find me on Twitter at MTGInQuarantine. You find the happy-looking Umog wearing a pair of headphones. You found the right place. And I'd like to utilize this opportunity again to give another huge shout-out and thank you to all the awesome people who have supported me over at patreon.com/MTGInQuarantine. So thank you to Mr. Big Benz, Anomaly, Draco Lucian, Neo Royal, Nick S, Infamous Fridge, Frugal Brutal, Jen of the Filthy MTG Casuals, Coach J-Ro, and Geek Beardly for supporting the show. If you'd like to help support the show and help me make more awesome content, head on over to patreon.com/MTGInQuarantine for more information. And you can get your own MTG in Quarantine branded playmat over at inkgaming.com. Link is in my link tree, which is in the description. And I hope everyone out there enjoyed listening to this episode of the MTG in Quarantine podcast. My name's MJ. Have a great rest of your day, everybody.